Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on today's program is Hayden Shaw. He's the author of Sticking Points, a new book. Subtitle is How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. He's also author of the Franklin Covey Leading Across Generations workshop. It's super popular. He's held in very high regard by the folks at Franklin Covey. So needless to say, he's in front of our microphone here. Hayden, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks for having me.
Just a couple quick points before we get started here. At any point in the creation of this book, specifically the book, I know a lot of the consulting work that you do is focused on this topic of getting cross-generational workforces to come together. But how often does this type of thing become emotional, where the old guard really do have a chip on their shoulder about the new kids who are coming in with their hats on backwards and their tattoos and the other stuff, and vice versa? You know, the millennials will be like, oh my God, get a cell phone already. You know what I mean? Learn how to text. You know, Facebook, are you kidding me? I guess my initial question is sort of more of the human, from the human standpoint of, how often does this stuff get seriously emotional?
It gets seriously emotional once in a while, when people are frustrated that they've asked or they've hinted and nothing's changed. Dress code, for example, of the 12 sticking points is the most emotional. Why are they wearing those clothes, and why do they think that's appropriate? Especially because it has to do with propriety and morality, those topics can get really touchy. But people in families get tense over the one aunt that won't get on email, so that all of the reunion planning ends up being frustrating because you have to phone her. Or the younger employee who, in the words of one senior vice president, when boomers are late for work, they call you, they apologize, they explain what went wrong, and they give you an action plan for how it will never happen again. But when my really capable 26-year-olds come in, they're 20 minutes late, don't say a word, and have a Starbucks.
I'm living a whole lot of that myself here. I think a lot of baby boomer managers are. But I'm going to turn this around a little bit and say we're actually seeing more and more, not exactly that model. I mean, sure, that's the big one. That's the way it works now. People who've been around, more experience in positions of power, the new kids come in. But I think more and more we're actually seeing the other way around. We're seeing super capable, very smart millennials come in frequently in something that might be a little bit more high tech or a little bit more new service oriented or even global in nature. And they're ending up running teams of people who are much older than themselves. What kind of unique challenges do these millennial managers face?
Well, they face two or three unique challenges. The biggest one is people feel like that the system has been messed up, especially Generation Xers, those folks who are in their 40s now, who in a high earning years when they need to start saving some money, pay off a house, start saving for retirement, and put some kids through college. And they felt like, I've been working here for the last 15 years in the trenches, and who is this kid who is now coming in and taking the spot that I thought was going to be mine? That's one of the things that's emerging. Secondly, younger generation folks have the reverse challenge of having to speak and learn the language of the older generation. Now, they honestly have an advantage, and that is they've got parents typically of that generation, and they've had to learn how to communicate and work with them. And lastly, the research is pretty clear that there are some things that older people will accept and not accept from younger people when it comes to respect and authority. So getting very clear on the sticking point of respect is absolutely critical for millennial managers.
Next question I have has to do with this issue of a quick anecdote you insert into one of the stories where you talk about a group of people who were attending one of your programs, and I'm not sure if they were from the HR department or not or whatever, and they were there apparently the whole morning, but after lunch, a fair number of them didn't come back. And when you inquired as to why they didn't come back, somebody, I guess, eventually told you that, well, they don't like the way that you're putting people into groups. You know, they're sort of against being labeled. How do you approach that type of issue? I mean, what do you tell folks? How do you put it in context? How do you get them over that hump?
Well, when you work with this generational topic, there are always a percentage of folks that hate labels of any kind. They don't like Myers-Briggs. They don't like the DISC. They don't like StrengthFinder. They don't like any of the tools that put people into a category. That's fine. It is definitely a free country. When it comes to categories, that was exactly what the developer who helped me write the workshop said. Whatever we do, we're not going to put people in categories and compare them. And I smiled and said, well, the research shows that Generation X is the most opposed to putting people in boxes of any of the generations. So thank you for fitting exactly into what the research shows your generation. He just started laughing.
You know, check.
Yeah, he started laughing and said, I fit the box of not liking boxes. I said, that's precisely the case. I said, but why don't we? I don't know anybody would buy a class on what all generations have in common, but I do think they'd be particularly interested in how not to stereotype. So when we put people into boxes, we're not putting them into stereotypes. We're simply talking about generational generalizations.
Another thing that I find interesting is the paradox of a baby boomer senior executive going on and on and on about how incredible his millennial kids are, okay? Uh-huh. But when he has to manage millennials, it's a whole different story.
I had the owner of a famous architectural firm say, we all raised him the same way. I love my kids. I want them to do well. I get mad when they tell me about how they're being managed by other people my generation. And then when I get people just like my kids at work, they drive me crazy and I complain all the time about them. He said, I love my kids, but I would hate to manage them. And we'd all just keep trading our children because we don't know what to do with them at work. In the book, I call that the half step. So what happens at work is we actually drop back half a generation. We don't go all the way back, but most of us drop back half a generation because we were raised up in the organization with a certain set of expectations. And then a new generation comes in and we say, well, you had to do it the way I had to do it when I came in. It's not fair that you don't do it the way I did it. And so I call that the generational half step. And so at work, most of us aren't nearly our generation as much as we are at home. We fall back.
How do you respond to people who tell you, well, they'll outgrow that? You know what I mean? It's just where they are. When they turn 30 or 40, they won't be millennials anymore. They'll be old like me. You know what I mean? How do you respond to that type of point?
That's true. Many of the things that people complain about with the newest generation in the workplace, the millennials, many of the things people complain about is actually a product of a new life stage called emerging adulthood. There used to be childhood, adolescence, early adulthood, and now adolescence ends at 18, early adulthood ends between 26 and 28. And as a result, there's a whole new set of experiences that explain a lot of the things that can frustrate people. And the baby boomers, ironically, were the first generation to have extended time in college before they went straight into the workforce, got married, had kids, bought a house, did the things that we consider settling down. And so the baby boomers, ironically, were the first generation to experience emerging adulthood. So will the generations change? The baby boomers have certainly changed. Now, they've not changed their political views dramatically. They've not changed many of their values dramatically. They've not changed their focus on meaning and significance rather than the older generation's sacrifice and selflessness. But yes, you change as you go through different life stages and different life experiences.
If you don't mind, quickly going through the four generations that you cover, sort of the back of the napkin definition, at least your definition of what these generations are.
Well, that's well said. My definition, because different experts break the generations at different places, because there is no year where a child was born with a sign that said, I'm the first of the Gen Xers. There's no one day that you can break them on. There's more of a pattern or a continuum where you begin to see things change in the way people vote and buy and answer surveys. And you begin to notice, hey, after this 3 or 4 year period of time, it really has shifted. And so that's right. Different experts break it at different spots, especially where the Xers end and the millennials begin. But overall, people start the traditionalists around the turn of the century and then end them after World War II. And begin the baby boomers after World War II, so they would be 67, and then a little younger. And then the Xers are people who were somewhere around 1963, 1964, they began. And then the millennials. Millennials, some people start them the late 70s, I start them the early 80s, and then they end around 2002, as best we can guess right now. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell because the youngest generation isn't voting or answering surveys yet.
Right. And you have listed in the book, and I have to really give you credit for it. These, what you call the 12 places where the four generations working together have stress points. And I think these are very well thought out. In particular, I admire what you've done with that one-page graphic that sort of breaks it up into how they each feel about a problem and, you know, what their solution and why they're that way. I have to tell you that that's sort of worth the price of the book itself. Those little diagrams, I think, are very, you know, obviously read all the words, everyone who buys the book, but those are terrifically useful and kind of a quick guide, a helpful, very helpful guide.
Well, I set it up so that a person could skim it quickly. You know, they could read it and then 6 months later say, oh, we just ran into that in our office. Now that I've got generational glasses on and can see this through a generational perspective, maybe these two problems we've been having around tensions around hours people work or coming in late or how we're communicating, maybe those tensions are really generational. And that way they could quickly scan through those charts at the very back of those sticking point chapters and be able to remember what they read.
If you don't mind, I'm going to dig down a little bit deeper on a couple of these, not all of them. We want people to buy the book, of course. I think one that is very self-serving, considering I work for the American Management Association, is the place, the sort of sticking point related to training. If you don't mind, can you describe how these four generations approach and deal with the topic of training?
Well, the four generations have come out of four different experiences when it comes to training. The traditionalists, and those are folks who are 67 and older, and they go to less training than any of the other generations. They're the smallest part of the workforce, but they do a lot of training outside of workplace. So they're constantly learning. Surveys have showed by AARP, but they're just not as big a part of the workplace. And frankly, organizations don't offer them training because they figure they're on their way out.
Right.
Okay. But they grew up where sitting in rows was the way you learned. On the other hand, the boomers came along and dialogue rather than lecture became a very popular form of teaching. So the boomers created their own rap sessions, sometimes with some illegal substances, but they created their own rap sessions.
Right.
And so dialogue was big. Xers come along and we began to introduce technology. But what we began to introduce with Xers was a lot more humor and a faster pace. Boomers were told, hey, if in this 3-day workshop, if you get two things you can use, consider that successful. Xers began to say, two things in 3 days, I can get two things on the World Wide Web in about 30 minutes. So you had better give me something a whole lot faster. And they didn't trust you as an expert just because you had credentials. They expected you to be able to answer real world questions and make it relevant. Well, the millennials have come along, and the millennials, their approach to learning is they've been doing it since an early age with a high entertainment value, and they expect to get a payoff very, very quickly. Think YouTube. Doesn't matter how long you make a YouTube video, the average person watches it for 2 minutes. So if you can't give something that's either interesting, entertaining, or valuable, every 5 minutes, you're going to hit a wall when you're training the younger generation.
Another one of these 12 places where you could potentially have conflict, and you brushed up against it a little bit with that last answer, is fun at work. If you don't mind, I think there's a topic that kind of piggybacks on that, and that's almost like humor in the workplace. You know what I mean? It seems to me that I'm, by the traditional definitions, I'm a baby boomer. I'm a later baby boomer. But I feel sometimes I'm just as snarky, you know what I mean, as any Gen Xer is. And obviously these different generational groups have different feelings about having fun or making jokes or humor in the workplace. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the first two generations, traditionalists and baby boomers, were heavily influenced by the farm and the factory. That's the world that the people who were important in their life and who raised them grew up in. And so in the farm and the factory, to quote my farmer grandfather, we're bird in daylight. If somebody were leaning on their shovel too long or chatting too long, the answer would be we're burning daylight because when the sun goes down, we're done. Whereas the younger two generations grew up under the electron, where you can work at 2 o'clock in the morning on a report as easily as you could work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And therefore, the electron, rather than the daytime, makes a big difference. Well, that has a big impact when boomers are saying, hey, we need to get this work done and then we can have fun. It is that eat your vegetables and then you can have your dessert. As opposed to, why can't we have fun throughout? Why shouldn't it be fun the whole time? The generation we raised on Barney and Sesame Street and interactive learning games is now saying, why can't work be fun all along? And over 10% of the workforce in the United States came out of McDonald's and other places in the fast food business. And they had to find ways of keeping work interesting and engaging to reduce turnover. And so they have a different set of expectations than that older generation does about the role of fun. And humor is related to that. What's professional and what's not in humor is one of the things the generations differ about.
Mm-hmm.
Parody is certainly a classic aspect of Generation X. The idea that we will cope with some of the challenges now that we see the world is not quite as glossy as we were led to believe when Pixie Dust flew The Wonderful World of Disney every Sunday night mm-hmm. to bless the boomer generation and their optimism.
Technology, in particular handheld technology or mobile technology, my cool new iPhone, that great new Samsung smartphone. Maybe it's the boomer in me sort of creeping out here, but I see an awful lot of younger people, sometimes it's my kids, who I think sometimes have almost an unhealthy dependence on this type of technology. Is that just me being a crusty old get off my lawn type of guy or what?
You are being a little get off my lawn. But one of the big things the younger generation has to know is that the older generations are oral generations. Oral tradition is how they pass down knowledge transfer. You sat around and listened to the older generation tell stories, and you picked up what you needed to know. But if you've got earbuds in, and you've got your head down, and you're always texting because that makes you more efficient, in their world, that also makes you uninterested and rude. And so learning another generation's language is critical if you want to be able to learn what you need to learn, get the mentoring you need, and move ahead. And now, on the other hand, crusty old get off my lawn people, yes, they don't mean anything by it. If there's one point, if there's a big point in this book, it's this. Don't take personally what another generation doesn't mean personally. And nobody, when my children are texting, they don't mean anything by that other than, Dad, I'm going to be out of the loop of my social life if you expect me to not check this for 20 minutes. Really? 20 minutes, that's a lifetime in the world of digital communication.
Okay, let's just talk about maybe something that's maybe sort of new and in the news and that type of thing. I think it's interesting that companies of note, and I won't name those companies, but companies that have very good reputations right now, either for their product offering or their service offering and the design work that they put into their offering, and in many cases, the unique customer support experiences they offer, really do pay attention to the crossover and the smudging and the blurring of lines between generations. So I guess it's actually possible to come up with product offerings and services that do appeal across generations and that aren't just they're new, they're youthful, and everything that's young and new is good. And if you agree with me or not, I'd be interested in your thoughts on sort of the topic of these really good, noteworthy, incredibly successful companies that are good at products and services and whatnot, that really are, I think in many ways, is solving a lot of these intergenerational issues. Do you see that? Or am I really kind of looking through rose-colored glasses and thinking that it's all really new and everybody just wants to be young and pick up the new stuff?
Everybody just wants to be young and pick up the new stuff. One of the things that Daniel Yankelevich, the leading researcher on boomers, identified is that youth is the ideal of the baby boomers. Ironically, when he surveyed baby boomers to find out what age they consider old, it's actually a year after average mortality. So boomers so pushed back old age that we die before we hit it. Youth is truly one of the key values. Boomers are the ones getting Botox, which, by the way, makes it hard for Gen Xers to know when they move up, because how do you know how close to retirement your boss actually is?
Yeah.
And so boomers want to be young, and so the cool technology and the cool devices are part of that interest in youthfulness and things that are practical that makes things work. Now, it's got to be practical, it's got to work, and they often get instruction from younger generations.
Mm-hmm.
But they're interested in good design that's youthful, that at the same time really works.
Okay, and I'll end with this type of question. What advice do you have for a new manager or a middle manager to get started, other than, of course, owning the book, to get started on thinking this type of way or get his teams headed in the right direction? If you only had a short bus ride with somebody who asked you that type of question, what would you say to them?
Quit trying to manage and lead. When there were three generations, it was very clear how power changed. The older generation had the power and the money. The next youngest generation raised the children, and the youngest generation had their childhood. Now that we have four generations, that process that we've used for thousands of years is gumming up. It just doesn't work the same way anymore. Now that four generations are at work, we can no longer manage our way through that. We have to lead. And so take, for example, dress code. When a group of senior executives spend a year and a half debating what is a flip-flop and what is a sandal, we have all lost our generational minds. I hear this one more often than anything else.
I think I've been in that meeting, actually.
What it means is, let's just get four generations. Let's ask them to sit down and talk to each other about dress code. And when they understand each other, let them propose what makes business sense for the organization. And let the executives take some of the pressure off and let the people who actually can explain it to their generation figure it out and interpret it. We make this much harder than it needs to be.
We've been speaking to Hayden Shaw. Hayden is the author of a terrific book entitled Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. And Hayden also does a lot of great work with Franklin Covey. Hayden, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We have a special gift for our loyal Edgewise listeners, a free copy of an ebook entitled AMA Business Bootcamp. In it, we have assembled the most critical must-have skills for managers and leaders. To download your copy, simply visit our website, amanet.org/bootcamp. That's amanet.org/BOOTCAMP. This free download will be available until November 1st, 2013. So get your copy now.
Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.